Now I'm going to introduce my speaker, Crystal M. from Sacramento.
Hello. Hi, I'm Crystal. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. I was like fidgeting. I was got a little nervous. I think that's a good sign. I have a sobriety date. It's September 15th, 2014. I have 3,995 days continuous sobriety. For those who don't math, that's 10 years. I got a sponsor. He knows I'm his sponsee, and I know that he is my sponsor. I have the opportunity of sponsoring some people, and I have one service commitment. I serve on the advisory council for the International Conference of Young People. I've been heavily involved with WIPA since I got here, but I didn't want to be. So let me tell you how that started. My parents met in the rooms. My dad brought H and I into my mom's rehab, and he followed her around for a couple years. And then they also broke up in AA. That was good. And so that breakup left a mark in my mom. So my mom still drinks. She's dying of cirrhosis of the liver. And my dad passed away with 34 years in this program. So I lived with my mom's side of the family, and it was socially acceptable to drink. So from a young age, I was given alcohol. I wasn't told that I was going to have a spiritual malady or an obsession of the mind. I wasn't forewarned. I was told that if I wanted to drink, all I had to do was go to school, get good grades, and help with whatever the family needs. Some other things I was told was what happens in this house stays in this house. I come from a very violent background. Violence was how we solved a lot of things, or used to, not anymore. I like to hug now, just to let you guys know. No violence. So as growing up like that, I wasn't taught how to talk about my feelings. So alcohol came in handy. Alcohol for me, it was fun, and then it was fun with a little bit of consequences, and then it was a survival tool to make sure that I behaved and that I didn't feel anything. I genuinely thought other people had childhoods like me, and I thought that most people, because my cousins coped like I coped. I didn't see anything wrong with it. It wasn't until my dad came into my life and I started telling him about all of the things I was going through. And he said, oh, you know what we're going to do? And so I also found my dad in an AA meeting, which is a fun story if any of you want to hear about it after this. But so AA has been very influential in my life. So when my dad would get me on the weekends, he wouldn't know what to do with me. So he would just take me to far AA meetings. That's what we did. We drove, and he had two commitments. And this is important. Okay, the two requirements was that I called him every Tuesday, and I couldn't lie to him. So he was the first person I ever got honest with, and I'm so grateful for that because I felt like my whole life I lived two different lives. I had to present this certain version, and then I was this other version when nobody was looking, you know? And my dad, I'm so thankful for him because I told him horrific things. And he didn't react. And he made it very safe. And so wouldn't you know that at 15 and a half, I went through something really awful and I ended up on his doorstep. Okay? And I was 15 and a half, and I needed a drink to go to bed. So what my dad did is I slept on his couch, and he put a big book and a 12 and 12 and a basic text and how it works and why. And he told me that these things were available to me, that I did not need them, but they were available to me. And every day that I lived with him, he would walk through the living room and he would say, I'm going to a meeting. You want to go? And sometimes I'd say yes, and sometimes I'd say no, but I once again never told that I needed that. I was never told that I needed this. Mind you, he watched me drink to deal with everything. And so he proceeded with a lot of caution, and I appreciate that. And looking back on it, I'm grateful for that experience, because sometimes I'd go to meetings and sometimes I wouldn't, but I sat in those meetings with him and I heard what you guys did here. My experience is that you sit in meetings and seeds are planted. It's not up to us when they grow, right? That's God's plan. And so when we talk about planting seeds, you sit in meetings, and I sat in meetings for a long time, from 16 to my most recent sobriety date is right after my 26th birthday. So for 10 years, I was in and out, okay? And I sat in meetings, and I heard what you guys did here. You got sponsors. You got higher powers. You did the steps. You were of service, and you went to meetings. And at 16, I was far too busy for all of that. I also hadn't lost the him, the her, the house, the dog, you know. I had things to do. I was not like you guys. I was determined to not end up here, okay? Did not want this. Even though my dad brought in back alley drunks into our house and they were covered. Some of the kindest people that I've ever met in my life were at those AA meetings my dad took me in Stockton, in Fremont, Monterey, and he would take me and these, you guys would like hug me and tap me on my head and tell me everything was going to be all right. So like, it wasn't that these meetings weren't safe for me, you know? It was the entitlement that I felt. And I meet people like that today and I'm like, just keep coming back. Like, I understand the weight of that suggestion now, because I am one of those people that had to do lots of research, even though I had plenty of great examples of this working. So, and I'm grateful. Nobody told me to get out. Nobody revoked my membership card. Nobody told me to take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth. Nobody told me that I spilt more than you drank. Nobody told me any of those things. I'm very grateful because I have heard that. Nobody told me I couldn't share when I was drunk and in a meeting. I didn't have any of those negative experiences, and I'm very grateful, because at the age, and I'll tell you, at 26, I had tried a lot of things. I'd moved. I've tried all these forms of alcohol, which I'm grateful for, because they brought me to my bottom way sooner than I probably, or they actually helped me save my life. But I've done so much research, it makes me a very qualified sponsor today. There's not a lot I haven't done. Assaults, to jail time, to trying to unalive myself, to health stuff, to being homeless, shot, stabbed. I've been told that women like me don't make it out from the crowds I hung out in, okay? And I still see some of those people, and they're like, damn, you are a miracle. But what happened to me on September 10th of 2014, you should know a couple of things happened. Both my parents decided to stop being my co-defendants. They stopped helping me. And I know that that must have been hard. I know parents in AA that only have one child or two childs, or two children, and they are succumbed to this thing, and they hold on. And I am grateful. I tell my mom on a regular basis, even though she drinks, I am so grateful that she said, "You can't stay here." See, my dad had all of you behind him, but when my mom, because I lived on a boarded up trailer on the side of my mom's house, to just paint a picture, I was 92 pounds, my hair was like 50 shades of red, and it looked like I was trying to dig bugs out of my skin. Just to paint you guys a picture, and my mom said, you can't stay here. And my dad had told me the same thing probably like 6 months prior, because my mom was my best drinking buddy. And when somebody like that tells you you're too far gone, it kind of hits, you know? And I'll never forget, on September 10th of 2014, I was sitting on this couch, and all forms of alcohol I was putting in my body, and that person I was with who no longer looked feasible, you know, I had this moment of clarity, and I was like, oh, I had this gift of desperation, right? This God moment that I finally knew, because I was left, nothing that I was putting in my body was working. And the committee in my head was so loud. And I had this thought, and I said, what if, I said, if I stay, I'm going to die. But what if I chose to ask for help? And I asked that person if they would drive me to this sober living environment in Hayward, California. And he didn't miss a beat. He was like, yeah. And I paced in front of this guy's house, of this SLE, for like 45 minutes, it felt like. It really wasn't. It was like 15. But because all of those seeds were growing, right? I was like, damn, I'm going to have to get a sponsor, and I'm going to have to get honest, and I'm going to have to do those steps and find a higher power and be of service and go to meetings for the rest of my life. Oh, this is the only thing I know. I tried. Sometimes I wish religion came very easy to me, because that's the only thing I couldn't really, you know, and I tried so many things, and I switched things, and I was like, God, oh. And I swallowed, and I asked for a bed, and that guy didn't even flinch. On September 10th, every year, I message him on Facebook, and I thank him, because when I asked, he said yes. And then he basically got his house manager. They put me in a bottom bunk, and they let me detox, okay, for 4 days. And on September 15th of 2014, I P-tested clean for the first, and sober for the first time in years. See, I tried to do this for him, her, the courts. And I knew that this time was for me. And I'm not saying everybody, like, your story doesn't have to sound like mine. But when you make that decision that this is for you, do it wholeheartedly. Do it with your, jump both in, both feet in. You know, give it your best effort. Don't make excuses. Do what we do here. Get a sponsor. Do the steps in a timely manner. Okay? Sit with your sponsor and write the 4-step. It's not that hard. Then talk about the 4-step that you just wrote. Work on 6 and 7 regularly. Okay? 8 and 9, you already did the footwork. 10, 11, and 12, they can always improve, okay? This is not a one shot and you're done. If that is what you have been told, or if that is what you're doing, that's not how I was taught. That's not what the book says. It, to me, I had done, we have, when people talk about the basics, I've said this will be the 4th time I mentioned them, right? We get sponsors. We do the steps, which helps us find a higher power. We are of service. Or no, we do step work. We are of service. And we go to meetings. They're like 6 things. 6 things, you know? And you don't have to make a vocation of this. And for me, I did one or two of those things. I go to meetings. I'd fellowship. I was of service. Things didn't change for me until I got a sponsor. And I got a sponsor. So I did the one. So I got here. Let me tell you. I got here and I had two reservations. No, I had two rules and a couple reservations. So let me tell you what those were, okay? Because I was going to say yes to anything you guys wanted, okay? I was going to live in that SLE for a year, okay? Because you get told things. After you spend about 10, 12 years in and out of these rooms, you remember things, right? And so I made a promise to myself. Nobody told me to do this. As I'm going to live in an SLE for a year, because if you can live in sober living for a year, you can live in the real world. It's a mesh pot of personalities. You are going to be accused of stealing, and you are going to, you know, your patience is going to be tried with somebody in the bathroom. And if you can work on all of those character defects in your SLE, you'll be fine with a roommate, okay? Or going back to your partner. You know, you'll be grateful. Gratitude is what you learn at an SLE. sorry. And the second thing was I wasn't going to put a relationship on a pedestal. I was going to put me on that pedestal. Okay? And it wasn't a year. It was a year. And I'll tell you about that in a second. My new rule of thumb is like finish the steps. At least make an amends. I know how to say, hey, I fucked up. I apologize. I'm trying not to curse, and it's difficult at times. So I get really passionate. So, and so, there we go. So here's the thing. I wasn't going to put a relationship on a pedestal, and I had reservations. If my dad died, I was going to drink the way that I wanted to drink. I didn't want to hang out with young people because I thought all they did was bang and tell fart jokes. And women terrified me. Okay? I can say that with my... I also didn't understand why women wanted to befriend me. I was the type of woman that would steal your stuff and help you look for it. Okay? I could not be trusted with anything you held of value. I was a liar, cheat, and a thief. I was not. And men were disposable. I had very bad, like, survival tools. I laughed today, and I thought I was like a 6'5", 200-pound, just like forced to be reckoned with. I am 5'5 and was like 92 pounds, like I said. So I was just a very scared little girl, okay? Very terrified. And so when women wanted to befriend me, I didn't know how. I didn't like me, so why would you like me? And I'm grateful because the first sponsor I had taught me the book, up into the four step, and then I bailed on her. And then the next sponsor I had was really about service and women. And so she made me go to women's meetings for a month, and then I ended up in this amazing women's meeting. And that was my home group for like 6 years. Love, love, love. I also should tell you that I lived in an SLE with 18 women in one bathroom, okay? My journey here has been an uphill battle, okay? I was on my way to community service, and I got hit by a car, and I broke my back. And I still have back problems today. I woke up in the hospital. I was 3 weeks sober. I woke up in the hospital, and my mom hasn't changed her phone number. And mind you, my biggest anger was towards her. She made me the way that I was. It was her fault. Her fault. My dad wasn't there. It was her fault. I hated her, but I knew her number, and she showed up, and I saw her in a different light. When she walked into that hospital room, She asked me if I was okay, and she asked if she could pay my phone bill. See, my mom isn't that emotionally available. She's just not. But man, has she financially been there for me. And I'm grateful for that. We have a new relationship, I am happy to say. And I'll talk about that in a second. So when I got here, I did everything you guys said. I didn't know how to look you guys in the face, so I was a greeter. That was my first commitment. And I just hugged people. I am a hugger. A lot of you guys handshake. It's confusing to me, but I'm doing it because I got some time. So I'm just, you know, but I am a hugger. So if you need a hug today at any point and see me, just put your arms open. I would love to hug you. It helped soften me in ways I did not know I needed to soften. I got here and I did the 1-2-3 shuffle with three different women. I was also told by two of the women that an experience I had didn't happen the way that I thought it happened. And it put a bad taste in my mouth. And finally, I heard this man speak at this meeting that happens at 8:15 on a Sunday. And he talked about what he did and how he ended up here. And I said, he can hear my fifth step. Well, that man, I was scared. And I, of course, balked and didn't ask him. I asked his wife. And both of them listened to my fifth step because it took me 14 months to write my first four step because I did the 1-2-3 shuffle. But let me tell you, I came in here with no higher power. I definitely got a higher power today. Sometimes it's the principles of the program. Sometimes it's the stars in the sky. Sometimes it's just plain old God. Just depends. And I'm here to give you the freedom to call it, name it, whatever. Just hope it's not you. Okay? Very simply. Just can't be you. I listened to the Joe and Charlie's tapes. I learned how to write a four-step because of them. My parental sponsors, which sounds controversial, he only sponsors me now, but they listened to my fifth step. And I did 6 and 7, and I was building relationships with women. And next thing on my list was young people's. I hung out in mainstream AA for 8-9 months before I even dabbled in YPAW. I had no interest. I ended up going to this Yuba camp out. I cried in front of everybody because I'm a crier now. And I love talking about my feelings. Go figure. I can also deal when you cry, you know. I can be supportive today. I used to run from people that cried, did not know why they were crying, did not care. I truly care today. It's huge. There are things fundamentally I thought would never change about myself, and because of y'all's example and because of the steps, I have learned to embrace things and learn how to be things I thought I could never be. And that's also due to a lot of service, because people will show you how to act and how not to act if you do enough service. Okay? I finished that first four step, and I finished my first fifth step. And I told you about that reservation of my dad dying. I celebrated 18 months and my dad died the next day. I was supposed to make my amends to him that following weekend, and I ended up making it to his body. I told myself that, I told him that I was going to try to do this thing to the best of my ability. If anybody deserved to see me get sober, it was him. And it's probably the hardest thing to walk through in early sobriety. And I'm so grateful that I was in the middle. And I, closed mouths don't get fed around here. That's one of my favorite sayings that old timers say today. Closed mouths do not get fed. We are not mind readers. I don't know if you're struggling. I don't care how nasty your face looks. I'm not going to ask you what's wrong. If you want to be closed up and write your own, closed mouths don't get fed. The book that we have teaches us how to be kind and ask for help and to be of service. Okay? Very simple stuff. But an alcoholic, we have the ism, the I, self, and me, right? And we think we're the most important person in the room, but we're not. So we need to be taught that. And that starts with asking for help. So yeah, I asked people for help. And I walked through that, and I had a whole celebration of life for my dad. My dad died with 34 years in this program. And when I gave my eulogy, everybody was in the program. No blood relation. Everybody was from AA or NA. Powerful stuff. My stepmom decided to be a not-so-nice lady, and I did not hit her, okay? Did not. She definitely deserved it. But my text message, I got all those women from the women's meeting, and then the young people were there. And so, like, I had my tribe around me, and it was like a spirit. Like, that is my spiritual experience is constantly seeing how people can show up in my life. I was abandoned, okay, by most people. My mother, my father, the two people that brought me into this world, and it has been devastating since I was born. I expect people to leave. I have a weird attachment to people. Okay, there are people in this room that I've known for years, and I don't care if we've had one conversation, we're friends for life. Okay, expect to get a hug. I remember people's names because love is love, and this is a cesspool of it. I love having friends. And I love being people's friends. I love answering my phone, and I love caring today because I did not care. You guys taught me how to care. There are fundamental things about myself that, like I said earlier, I did not think I was capable of, because the violence it took for me to be this gentle, I do not like to rehash. So instead of becoming violent, I remain gentle, and I remain in this beautiful space that allows me to help people. You guys taught me that. So with that, I've done a lot of service, done a lot of WIPA, done a lot of things in this program. My step work has been the highest impact. I did not know that I wanted to be a sponsor. But I definitely loved service, and I did enough WIPA where I did enough four steps that I inventoried the group enough. And anybody that's done inventory, you realize that you're the problem, you know? So I was definitely my problem a lot of the time. I like to take things personally. I have high expectations of other people. I like to talk to people aggressively. I used to make people feel uncomfortable with my tone of voice, the way that my face would look at them. And I also loved chaos. So I would talk shit behind people's backs. It got back to them. You know, I've done everything wrong here and then inventoried it and then cleaned it up. And I just didn't drink. I'm just letting you know. It's also what makes me very qualified when sponsors are like, oh, I did this thing. And I'm like, okay. You know, I've done silly shit, like charge myself for 2 cucumbers and actually take like 8 home, you know? You know how silly that is to tell your sponsor at like 4 years of sobriety? Silly. So silly. And I'm grateful because the people here have shown me nothing but love and kindness. I remember I talked a lot of stuff about the first committee I was on, and I went and made amends for gossip, even though they hadn't even heard any of the gossip. And they're like, thank you for telling me. And I was like, yeah, in case it ever does get back to you, I want us to actually be friends. I don't want to trauma bond with people. I literally want to love you. And when I started to learn how to love people, I learned how to love myself. You know, I walked through the death of my dad, and I've walked through a lot of other hard things. I'm going to get to, I don't know what time it is. I can talk. Okay, we're good. Okay, cool. So that was like the first couple years. I tried a relationship. I didn't do any work around relationships, really. So that imploded on itself. And so did the next couple relationships, whether they were in or out of the rooms. I am always my problem. I didn't have really healthy examples of relationships. I also had this weird-ass ideals list that I had to keep inventorying. The amends that I made throughout my sobriety have had the biggest impact. My mom, I went and made an amends to my mom, and she asked me to come and see her once a week. And I like talking about this because I showed up, the women's meeting I went to was on Mondays, so I said, okay, I'm going to go to a meeting, and then I'm going to go to my mom's, right? Like, that was my, and so for almost a year, I went to this women's meeting, and then I went and hung out at my mom's house, and I sat there, and I watched TV with her, and she wouldn't speak to me. And I'd call my sponsor, and I'd be like, she didn't talk to me. He's like, you get to keep going. I'm like, all right. It wasn't until a year later she finally realized that I didn't care if she went to AA or not. She was just like, so you really just want to hang out with me? And I'm like, I would love to talk. And then she ended up like letting me come and live with her. Wild. And then that got a little toxic. I started becoming her therapist again, and I was slipping into old behaviors, and I was doing all this AA service, and I was losing myself in that and getting consumed and not doing a proper 10, 11, and 12, 6 and 7 were out the door. I basically started doing the steps backwards around a year living with my mom, and I like to talk about this, right? Like, I stopped. I really didn't want a sponsor, so I wasn't really, like, I was bailing on sponsees. This was, like, year 5, you know, and they tell you 1 through 5, you're like cleaning up you, and then like 5 through 10, you kind of find who you are. Okay, my 5 through 10 pulled me through the ringer, and that's what I'm going to tell you about real quick. Okay, so I basically started bailing on sponsees. I wasn't doing any kind of meditation, no real like spot check inventory or nightly inventory. I stopped acknowledging that I, you know, did anything wrong to anybody. So then my character defects started creeping up. And then I was like, my will over God's will. And I got real close to a drink. Ended up at BevMo. Bought 3 bottles of alcohol. I was getting kicked out of my mom's house. I had this cute little piglet I'd had. And because I don't do relationships well, so I got an animal, right? And so I got this animal, and if anybody's ever dealt with a piglet, they're a lot. You have to, like, acclimate them to yourselves. It's like, a whole thing. But I was, like, getting kicked out. I had a falling out with my YPAW committee. Like, it was just, I was like, this is not worth it. And I got a call from, like, an SLE that needed a manager. And then next thing you know, I was at a friend's house, and they had made a crystal appreciation day. And then I ended up getting this, like, video sequence of people telling me how I've, like, helped them, taught them how to change their oil, to showing up to just sit with them, always picking up the phone, talking to them at events when they were sitting alone. Somebody said I was the responsibility statement had come alive through me. And I didn't drink. So I dedicated the next couple years to really figuring out why I was the problem. And I started doing things differently. I moved to Sacramento, and everything got real good. Ended up hosting IKIPA. I was the chair of the 63rd IKIPA in San Francisco. I got a really great job, started my own business, got a whole boatload of sponsees. I was in the middle of AA again, was doing all my step work, and I was thriving. And that conference ended, and I was coming up on 10 years. And I wish I would have had some kind of service. I wish I would have listened to my sponsor. I dove into another relationship. I let that be my higher power. And this past December, I almost drank again. I called my sponsor, though, instead. I didn't end up at BevMo. And what I had done is I had gotten rid of everything that I had worked hard for and basically moved across the country for a relationship. And I didn't really work on myself. He became my everything and then my problem. I didn't want to look at myself. And so instead of drinking, me and my sponsor got together. We figured out how to get me back. So I moved back in March, and I started working on that four-step I probably should have done before I moved. And within writing that four-step, that little pig that I had that saved my life, I had to put him down. I had friends and relationships with me, cancer. I went through a series of losses. And just kept writing that four step because that's what I know how to do. I dropped that fifth step about 2 months ago. Been working on 6 and 7 regularly. I have a list of amends, and I get to go over those with my sponsor soon. And I'm feeling so much better. I'm here to tell you that, like, it gets to be a roller coaster ride sometimes. It's not all rainbows and butterflies, but my feet know how to work, right? I have a service commitment that I love. I have a higher power. I have friends that let me sleep on their couches to move back. And I am grateful for the life that I have. I laugh again and I smile, and this program works. I hope that you have a sponsor that you want to take suggestions from. I hope you do step work. And if you haven't done the steps in a while, I hope you treat yourself to a round of steps. I hope that you stay to learn more about yourself, because you are a miracle, you know. And if nobody has told you that they love you, I love you. I am an example of going through hard things here in sobriety and staying, because closed mouths don't get fed. And there's nothing that you could go through that somebody in this room hasn't already gone through, okay? That is my experience. And I heard recently that sometimes the help that you need doesn't come in the form that you expect. Sometimes your least favorite person, or the person you think is real annoying, is the person you should be vibing with. You also don't have to be everyone's friend here, okay? But you do get to be kind to them. And, before I end, I want to let you know that I talked about me and my mom's relationship, and that's probably been the biggest improvement. I went no contact with my mom probably about a year and a half ago, and then she came back into my life and admitted to me that she didn't know how to have a relationship with me, because we've never had a relationship, but she was willing to work on it. For the last year, we've been calling each other every couple weeks, and it's the best thing. There is something that is healed in me, and if you would have told me that, I'm glad that nobody said that I'd get my mom back. I got to a place where I was like, she's never going to be in my life. And God said, just kidding. It's just not going to look the way you thought it was going to look. My mom is still not emotionally available, but my mom does care. And I get to care back at her without expectations. I get to love her for who she is. And I am grateful that I know how to love people where they're at, not who I want them to be. And today, my inners match my outers. And I hope that you find that beauty in life. Because when I got here, I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. And today, I look at myself in the mirror and I see all of the beautiful things I've become. I am not that 92-pound girl. Today I get to be a lady of grace and dignity with a little bit of sass. So, thank you. And, yeah.